By 2017, Ohio was second only to West Virginia in the rate of opioid overdose deaths, thousands more than just 6 years ago. It is so bad that a school district in Ohio has started a program for children of addicted parents and grandparents. Joining us from Minford, Ohio, a rural town in the southern part of that state, is Kendra Cram, a social and emotional teacher hired last year to teach elementary school kids, little kids, how to deal with trauma. Kendra, welcome.
Hi, Robin.
And Maren Applegate is a district school psychologist who said she started noticing changes in her students about a decade ago. Maren, thanks to you as well.
Thanks, Robin.
You know, there have always been kids suffering from parents' addictions, you know, children of alcoholics who are making breakfast for their siblings and, you know, kids you might notice who are coming in, you know, wearing the same clothes every day. But how has it exploded exponentially because of the opioid crisis? I mean, can you tell us some of the things you're seeing without, of course, giving away identities?
Absolutely. So some of the things that we're seeing in the school setting, and that about 10 years ago, our preschool teachers across our county, across our area, were reaching out and kind of screaming for help. A lot of the behaviors that we're seeing, traditional things don't work with. We see kids that just completely shut down. I mean, completely shut down, no affect, no response, not taking in information. We see a lot of transiency in kids. So we have a lot of kids that are, you know, here with us for a minute, moving somewhere else, and then back to us. I just worked through one student's records who has attended almost, we have 13 school districts in our county, and she's attended almost every single one of those districts within a year. As well as truancy. We see a lot of missing school, being late to school, parents not showing up to pick up, things like that. Kids' behaviors, you know, we see some real limited eye contact, lots of disconnection from kind of the world around them and what's happening in the classroom setting. Not showing a lot of empathy or care for peers or understanding, you know, that peers have feelings and emotions. We've seen a lot of tantruming or meltdowns, and you know, those things look like kicking, screaming, hitting, throwing. And these kids are extremely hard to de-escalate. Yeah. So traditional kids, we use our strategies and we're able to de-escalate very quickly and get back into the classroom setting.
And, you know, kids across America are seeing too much violence. But do we understand in just Minford, just this one town, last academic year, four kindergartners lost parents to fatal overdoses. A fifth lost a parent to a drug-related homicide. Kendra, is that possible?
We've had a lot of kids that have been affected by the opioid crisis here in our county and in our school district, and even had a child that came to school and got off the bus, went to breakfast, came to me and said, you know, my mom died this morning. And it was true. Her mother had passed away earlier that morning, and she had gotten herself on the bus and gotten herself to school. And I'm just saying very matter-of-factly, my mom overdosed this morning. As a very young child, having to cope with that kind of emotional trauma and stress. And that's what we're seeing a lot of, is that our kids are dealing with a lot of trauma. And what we know from research is that children who are dealing with trauma are in that survival part of their brain, that downstairs part of their brain. And when that's happening, they're not able to access their prefrontal cortex, which allows them to retain information and gain new information. So they're not able to learn math or reading or writing during that school day. They're thinking about survival skills and getting enough food to eat or having their basic needs met. So the trauma is affecting their academic outcomes and their development.
Well, their life, their very life. I mean,
yes,
it's one thing to be
life.
In a room.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's one thing to be in a room when your parent dies, but then these kids suffer the violence of addiction. They've been, you know, beaten up, molested. I mean, it's just awful. And also, some of them have been born to active addicts, and so they might have consequences of that. So, Maren, talk about some of the things you're trying to do here. I understand that there's a room, for instance, where there's blankets, you know, the heavy blankets, the kind we hear about, thunder blankets that you want to put on puppies, but it's for the children to help them calm down?
Yes, so we have a sensory room in our elementary building, and we have a variety of things to calm kids as well as things to stimulate their senses. So we have kids that go in there that may spend 5 to 10 minutes on the trampoline just jumping to get out every bit of energy that they have. Or maybe they're jumping to put some energy and oxygen into their brain to get themselves going. We have things like lava lamps that are calming to look at. It's a small space that's organized and not overwhelming, where kids can go to come back to themselves, whether it's journaling or jumping on the trampoline or the bouncy ball or building with Legos, you know, whatever it is that they need at that point in time.
Yeah. And Kendra, I want to ask you, when you work, there are people who come into the school system to work one-on-one. You work with groups. How do you work with kids? I mean, again, a child of an alcoholic doesn't want to say what's going on at home. Somebody who's watching their parents shoot up. What techniques do you use to interact with them?
We are implementing a social-emotional learning program at our school where every child in kindergarten through fourth grade comes for 45 minutes every single week.
Even if they may not have active opioid-addicted parents? Every kid?
Absolutely. Every child. So I see about 500 children a week. They come in for 45-minute sessions. So our children have activities like music and gym and library, but they also have social-emotional learning as an activity. So they have a scheduled time that is time to make social connections and interpersonal connections, doing mindfulness activities, and learning about establishing and maintaining positive relationships and how to manage their emotions, how to set and achieve positive goals, how to feel and show empathy for other people, how to make responsible decisions, and to have effective communication. So during our sessions, we're talking about how to manage our emotions.
Give us an example of how that looks. For instance, you talked about children not being able to meet someone's gaze. Mm-hmm. Is it literally, let's practice looking me in the eyes? I mean, how does that...
This is Maren jumping in. Absolutely. And, you know, Kendra talked about all those things. And one of the key components to that is the modeling and practice. You know, we do a lot of modeling of it, a lot of practice with it in Kendra and her setting. And then we work for that carryover into the classrooms. You know, our teachers know what Kendra is working on and what the skill is. And oftentimes they feed her what the concerns are and what they'd like her to focus on. Yeah. So really making sure that Kendra's implementing it, as well as we're providing that carryover into the classroom setting and that modeling and practice and trying to make it a routine behavior by continued practice.
Well, it's one thing for the kids who have the active parents at home. But are you saying this spills over to other kids who may not come from a home where opioids are being abused?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
All of our children can benefit from social-emotional learning. And whether they've had significant trauma in their life or not. And it's important to note that a lot of families in our area have had a lot of trauma. And what we're doing is we're really taking that research seriously about educating the whole child and looking at that and saying, you know what, we need to provide more than just thinking about reading, writing, and math. We need to help these children to become productive citizens, to be happy, and to really look at mental health.
Tell us more about why that is. I mean, are they aware that their community is getting shattered by this? I mean, probably a lot of people are related. And so,
yeah. Every family in the community is impacted in some way, whether there's a friend, a family member. The majority of the members of our community are feeling some type of overflow from it. And, you know, in the school setting, the kids, as they're talking about it and they're processing, you said something a little bit earlier, and I was thinking about, you know, normalcy and what some of these kids see as normalcy is so much different than what we see as normalcy. So you talked about kids not wanting to share what's going on at home. And what we see with the younger kids is they really don't know that it's wrong or different. It's what they've always known and what they've always seen. So they do share, and we get lots of information, and they share with their peers. And then so there's a lot of conversation back and forth, and, you know, helping them to try to, while respecting their family and their family's issues that are going on, also help them to realize that there's other ways to do things. There's other ways to be in this world.
That's Minford school psychologist Marin Applegate. And we spoke with the district's social and emotional teacher, Kendra Cram, about how not one child in the town's elementary school has not been touched by the opioid crisis. I can't get over the little girl who gets herself to school after watching her mom die. So we're going to have them both back tomorrow with what they're doing to cope.
We have kids who are showering at school. We have agencies we work with that provide us new clothing to provide to kids. We have laundry accessible at school.
Minford police cars and ambulances are now stocked with backpacks filled with things like blankets and toys for the kids they have to rescue after parents overdose. If you live in a community that's been hit this way by the opioid crisis, we'd love to hear from you.